I want to give some tips to people. So you're a realtor. So the first thing is, like, when you're showing people properties and things of that nature, right? We always hear about, like, good neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods. Like, what makes a neighborhood, quote unquote, a good neighborhood, like, for people that's looking to buy a home? They always say the school system, but, like, what else?
Well, I'm looking at the numbers. So I'm a numbers person. So if you're interested in a certain area, I'm going to run the market stats. I'm looking into Curbed Atlanta. I'm looking at the developments that take place. So I have, like, a little spreadsheet I start developing on zip codes and keeping up. So if the appreciation values are going up year over year, that's a good thing. If they're going down year over year, that's something I want to talk to you about. So that doesn't make a great neighborhood if the appreciation values are on the negative and not in the positive. So people start focusing on the schools when you need to be looking at the values, or the values going up or down. That's number one. That's what makes a great neighborhood. I feel like the second part, what makes a great neighborhood, is what's important to the client. There are some people that they want to be in a live work space. They want to have some place that they can walk outside and happy hour and all of that. Then we need to find out if that's a good neighborhood for you. And then you have other people, I want to walk nature trails, you know, I want to be in those types of areas. So it's not general, it's client specific. But generally speaking, everybody should be worried about appreciation values and school systems, because both of those go hand in hand when it's time for you to sell your property, because every property is a profit. Mm-hmm. That you should look at your house as a bank. You're trying to make money when you sell this house.
So what you say Curbed Atlanta?
Curbed Atlanta.
What's that?
And so it's basically a online magazine that you can use to look at different developments in different neighborhoods and what's up and coming. So I was just looking up a project for in College Park. My clients are looking to get a property in College Park, and they have this big $6.5 billion project that's coming down there where they're making a mixed-use space down in that area. And the reason for that, even though it's part of Fulton County, that area has been economically challenged for so long. Now they're going to bring in, because the average median income that a person was making down there is like $29,000 a year. But the regular people up here in Atlanta on the north side of Fulton County is $65,000. Mm. So they have an initiative to make that better, and they're calling it Airport City because it's literally by the airport.
I just saw that y'all got a G League team coming to California.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So I keep up with what's going on in our city. That's, and I can tell you that if you were looking to invest, maybe you want to look over here, because now the prices are low, but they won't stay low when the project comes up.
Did that website also shows the appreciation values?
No, that's on the back end. You got to do some work for that. That's the agent thing. You know, you're going to have to log into your MLS and you're going to have to run some stats.
Okay.
You got to run some
reports. Regular person wouldn't be able to see that.
No.
Gotcha.
Is there any way a regular person could see if appreciation values are going
up? You can see something, because you know what? A lot of our stats now, even though they're a little skewed, I hate Zillow. Let me say that. I hate Zillow.
Nah,
I don't want
Zillow
you to
told me
that.
My house is worth $800,000.
Right. The owner of Zillow, you know, he even sold his house for less than the house he said his own house was worth. But you can use sites like that to get a general idea of what's going on in the market, because if you scroll down, it'll talk about values and recent solds. So that'll give you help if you don't necessarily want to jump out the window with a realtor. You can at least see what's going on there.
So when you're showing a house, right, staging a house, what's that process like? Are you or your company putting the items, the furniture, everything, the decor into the house? Like, how's that work?
Well, okay. I have what's called a friendly little staging. So I have like a couple of items I keep in a storage room. If you ain't really got the budget, or if we just need a few things like a pillow or something like that, a plant, I go over there, I put that in, it's nothing. Cause when the house sells, it makes it better. Other than that, if it's like a full staging project, it depends. We have so many ways we can do. We got virtual staging, got a company can just basically virtually stage the whole house. I mean, in person it's going to be empty, but those pictures, you're going to show up, Then you also have companies that you can hire to come in and stage the properties for you, which is what I do for people that's like, listen, you need to stage this property to sell it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as like school system, because that's a big one, how do you know, like, it was like the school's like 4-star, it's like ratings? Like, like, what do you look at, like, to see the schools?
You can see it everywhere, but I like to go to greatschools.org. I like the site because it tells you a lot about the neighborhood in the area, because, due to fair housing, we can't say certain things to our clients. But when you go to greatschools.org, not only does it tell you the star of the school, but it also tells you the demographics of the students, and it tells you each category. So science, they're growing. They're low in math, so it's categorized. So if you're looking at demographics of the students, then you know demographics of the parents.
Yeah, and then parents can write reviews and everything about the school district.
They write reviews about the school, so it helps. I tell people to use greatschools.org to find out about the school.
Once upon a time, there was a review written about me. Yeah, once upon a time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You want to teach
her? I am.
Oh,
am.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you know about that site.
I do. Good. All right. Yeah, good site.
Yeah. Hey, he's definitely a teacher.
In more ways than one.
So how important is comps? That's like the most important thing?
Absolutely. You got to have comps, and you have to search for comps. So I'm so obsessed with comps. I took an appraisal class at the beginning of this year. Oh, maybe it was the end of last year. I don't know. Everything's running together. But I really wanted to know, like, how are these appraisals coming up with these numbers? Because they're disputing me. If I'm on the selling side, yeah. It's like, wait a minute. I know this house is worth this. Like, how are you guys coming up with this? So comps are important because appraisals have to happen for people to get the houses financed. And if it comes in below value, it's an issue.
I had a very, very unfortunate situation when it came to appraisals. I didn't even know there was a class. So where can somebody take the class? And are you noticing there's more people that look like us taking these classes? Because that is the part of the home buying process that can make or break things.
The class I was in, it was just me and one, it was three of us okay. in there. It was only three of us. It was 8 o'clock in the morning. You had to drive like an hour and a half outside the city to get there. It was only three of us there. But I took the class, and there's a few things I learned about these appraisals. Mm-hmm. First of all, they can get their license the same way in realtor get their license. It's low barriers to entry. They're human too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you got to walk them. You know, if they're not really an experienced appraiser,
yeah.
I learned from my listings, go ahead and put my comps on the kitchen table. I'm trying to meet them at the house. I'm trying to explain to them at the moment how I came up with my comps and why they should use mine.
Okay.
Because by the time they write it on the report, is even though you can dispute it, they never get changed.
I know.
Yeah, because that's important. Because what he's referring to is, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but the Bookings Agency Institute did a report last year, and they said that black homes were undervalued by $156 billion. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
So, and we did a whole thing on the podcast about it. And Troy actually, it happened to Troy. His house got like devalued by like $60,000.
It happens a lot.
$100,000.
Yeah, compared to his neighbors with like same type of houses.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's called redlining. You know, let's not act like it doesn't happen. I'm honestly speaking, I tell my clients to take all those personal pictures out the house. You don't know. My clients are ambiguous when you walk in there. You don't know who owns this house, mm-hmm. what they look like. I do it on purpose. I tell them, take them out. Like, don't even hide them in the closet. Take them out the house. Put them in somebody else's house. Put them in your trunk. You don't, because people are, it's
human nature.
It's a dirty game.
Nature.
It's a dirty game.
Even if it's subtle.
If it's subtle.
It's like they could still have a hidden,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a
objective. Yeah.
It's a hidden objective.
But if there's more people on the side of, you know, the people who are actually from our communities actually doing these appraisals, then we may have a fair chance.
We'll have a fair chance because we know what to fight for,
right.
You know, and we know what makes sense. You could successfully fight an appraisal. It may delay your closing, but if you have the comps and you can run down the numbers and you can show, you can fight an appraisal. You just need someone to do it for you.
Okay.
You need to have them look at that.
So how do you fight? How do you fight the appraisal?
The number one thing is you're going to have, like, I've done a few appraisal fights.
Mm-hmm.
One, you need to make sure that you're comparing apples to oranges. So you got to break down the comps when it comes to the upgrades in the house. That stuff counts.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the square footage, that counts. And sometimes they'll leave off a good chunk of your square footage. So maybe you want to hire your own company to come in and measure the square footage of your house. That's the number one mistake that people actually look over. I had one house, they was missing a whole 900 square feet. Of course you
understand. That's exactly what happened. They said that.
See?
And Chai, he knows for sure, like, the lower level of my house, they didn't count.
Exactly. They do that often.
At all. Like, and we have like a gym down there, a whole another, like, almost
have
apartment.
A
Yeah, a window, bathroom.
That,
like,
you know how you, as long as you got a window, door, extra door, it's counted as a finished space. See, they're still counting it as an unfinished space,
right.
Because the tax records had it as unfinished probably before you finished out that bottom.
Yeah.
And so this, a lot of times, like I said, you got to fight that. Like, no, this is my square footage. This is how I had a company come out and measure.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pass this up. So you can dispute that.
Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
and can you, like, complain about an appraiser? Like, is there, like, a complaint
Absolutely,
board?
Absolutely, because all appraisers work for a company. So
right.
When you look at the very bottom where they sign off, there's a company name there. Get in touch with the person that's in charge.
Yeah, I still have his name written down.
Yeah, you can't just go by the person that comes out and appraise. Like, they're working for a major company,
mm-hmm.
but the company that they work for, then you need to send them your grievances and your evidence and go from there.
It happened to D.L. Hughley.
I saw that.
That was crazy. And it was like, he got his house to pray, and it was so low that the bank actually called him and thought that he had, like, damage done to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And so it was just such an egregious situation, and obviously he's famous, so that helped probably too. The bank actually reversed it,
of course,
and they apologized, but they was like, he was like, it was so low compared to his neighbors, they thought it was like damaged.
Mm-mm. But that it still happens, and that's why I think that we have to be very careful when you're working with people, and you know your stuff. If you're a homeowner, you need to know. You need to have documentation of upgrades you've done in your house. Keep up with that. You need to have documentation of your square footage. Anything that you've done in your property, you need to keep up with that and keep it. We're so lackadaisical until we need it. Mm. Then when you're in a position where you want to sell and you come in undervalued, you can't even find the documents to prove it. One time I fought a low appraisal by actually having every single receipt that my client used to upgrade their kitchen. Mm-hmm. I put all that in a big package. I wrote it out. I wrote out what this would be, how these comparing properties sold with these upgraded kitchens, and we got the house up $10,000, and they were trying to bring us down. Like, we still didn't hit the number I wanted, but we still got $10,000 back credit. So you can fight this stuff. You just got to know.
So what makes a house more desirable? Because they always say, like, the kitchen is like something that's bathrooms, like a big item. Like what, you as a realtor, what would you suggest people that are looking to sell their home or even buy a home? Like what's the desirable things that people can do to add value to their homes?
Well, I think general maintenance. I find a lot of times when people are ready to sell their house, they got in the house, ain't been pressure washed since 06. Mm. You know, it need pressure washing. You can tell it's deferred maintenance on the property. So you need to get that stuff done if you want to sell for top dollar. If you have a kitchen, and we know how those kitchens look back in the day, but it was the walnut color cabinet, and you walked in the house, it was like burgundy walls, and the other room was yellow.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to get agreeable gray hair ASAP.
If you're, my old grandmother.
Yeah,
if your fridge is white,
if your refrigerator is still white, but your stove is black because you replaced the stove when it broke, but your refrigerator is still kicking, these certain things you're going to need to do. So you need to be prepared to just have general maintenance, unless you're trying to sell it below value. If you want to sell for top dollar, you need to present a product like that. The kitchen counts. The general maintenance of the property is what is really important to a lot of people.
Yeah, one thing that they looked at and they took into account was the roof. Roof is important too.
Oh yeah, roof is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a homeowner, you need to be calling your home. You need to call your little insurance company anyway. Yeah. Was there some hail here? You better watch the news.
So, but it's kind of tricky because it's like if you're trying to sell a home, at what point do you do too much renovation and it's like not really worth it?
Oh, that's when you start looking at the comp. So I tell people all the time, there is a certain cat in your neighborhood. So don't go putting marble floors in a $200,000 house. You're not going to get your money back.
Right.
You know, you have to be very careful about that. So when you're looking at comps, look at the photos of what recently sold too. Yeah. Look at, and then get a good idea of your area and your demographic. If you got a $500,000 house, don't use that sticker backsplash that you can get from Home Depot. I'm going to need you to get some real tile back there. But if you're selling a $160,000 house, you can throw the sticker up there. You got to know.
We spoke about that on the episode with Matt when we were talking about 50 Cent. He put this multi-million-dollar home renovations in it in a neighborhood that the average house is like $300,000.
It makes no sense. It's never going to
happen. Elephant.
The white elephant.
It's a white elephant. And you're never going to – first of all, an appraiser ain't going to be able – they're not going to be able to comp that. Like, what? Why would you – like, no. You got to stay in line with the neighborhood.
So you want to stay in line.
You want to stay in line. You could do a little something extra, but don't expect to get your money out of it if you take it too far.
Don't go – that's important for people to know, because a lot of times people want to just do crazy things and put the jacuzzi in with the grotto.
You do that. You do that if you want that. But
got the movie theater.
You got a whole movie theater. Yeah. And it might have cost you all this money, but you ain't getting it back.
Strobe lights and everything.
Heated pool.
Shout out to 50, man.
It's sold.
Yeah. So when somebody's selling a house, what are some of the fees, right? I think people don't really understand that. What are some of the fees that come along with selling a house?
When you're selling your property, you're paying to sell your property. So there's a lot of fees that can come along with that. So you have the, of course, general maintenance, getting the house ready to go on market. Mm-hmm. But you pay the agent. You pay us. Who you think pay us, the buyers? Oh no. you pay the buyer's agent and the selling agent. So you have those expenses, and then the only other expense that you have is like your prorated taxes. And if you have a homeowners association, you're gonna have to get the clear HOA letter. So your fees are minimal.
Yeah.
But the biggest fee you pay is your realtor.
What about, is that the closing cost as well? Because I see it's like tricky. Sometimes a buyer has it, sometimes a seller does it.
Well,
how does that work?
Well, this is the thing. The buyer can negotiate closing costs. Mm-hmm. You look at the market, you look at the area. You need to, when you're pricing the property, you need to look at also, I personally look at what's been going on in the area, the recent sales, and on average, what are the sellers contributing? Because my biggest thing is I don't want you to set the expectation that nobody's contributing anything, and you don't have to, when the whole area, everybody's in contribute $10,000 on the average. Okay. They don't have to contribute. Yeah. If you're getting like an FHA loan, they can contribute up to 6%. They can do 3% on a conventional loan, but they don't have to contribute anything because that's their profit. Mm. So if you get enough demand for the property, which is, you know, my thing is getting multiple offers, creating a bidding war, and like, hey, somebody not going to need the money, or you need $1,000, boom. I'm taking that offer before I take somebody to need $10,000.
Okay.
How do you negotiate, like, okay, you can negotiate closing costs, but like, what's the lowest you can go on that?
Zero. I have sold houses where my sellers have contributed no dollars to the closing costs. Find your own money.
Really?
Yes. Mm. I tell buyers that all the time. Like, you're not entitled to the profit from the seller. The seller has their own expenses. They're paying these realtors' fees, sometimes 7% realtor fees, yeah, that they have to pay just to even get their property sold. They don't necessarily have to, and depends on the area, the demand that you create by staging the property, getting the property prepared for marketing, pricing it correctly, and having an agent like me, you know, out there, you may not have to pay.
So anything. Has anybody tried to negotiate? Do you negotiate your fees?
No.
Non-negotiable. Not playing that game.
Let me tell you something. I tell people that's the number. My favorite line is, if you want me to negotiate my fees, can I negotiate my service? As long as I can negotiate my service, we can do this.
I like that.
So that's the seller's fees. Now the commission's fee, is there a standard commission fee for realtors?
Yeah. It's subjective, 7%, 6%, 7%.
Okay.
And so that's about the fee of it, the total price of the property times 7%.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's like these $1 million listings. Like that. You ever watch that show?
Pay? Oh, police. Yeah, I watch that show.
That's because, yeah, I think that's like what people really like are attracted.
That's what you want. Yes, yeah, that's yeah. what you want. Because, I mean, then you still split the money. You know, you got the selling side and the buyer side to wait for you to really come in. So you I list the property.
Yeah.
So I get my 6% commission if I bring a buyer and I'm representing the seller. Because in our state, we can do dual agency.
I was going to ask you
represent
that.
Represent both. Yeah. But if you bring the buyer, then I got to give you half of that. So I get my three, you get three.
Okay.
So it's not a conflict of interest to represent both?
Depends. It can be a conflict of interest. One person becomes a client, the other person is a customer. It's the only way you're able to do it. You have to walk a fine line because, really, generally speaking, then you're just there as to consult and write paperwork. You really can't negotiate for either party. I've done a couple of dual agencies with like investors or people that really know what they want. It's real hard to do dual agency with a first-time buyer. I'm going to tell you that now. As a matter of fact, if I get a first-time buyer, I'd rather refer them to a person with my team before I try to negotiate, because I'm fighting hard for my seller to keep their money. You're a buyer, you fighting hard to get money. How are we gonna make this work?
Mm.
You know, especially a first time buyer. Now an investor, they're different. They know what they want, they're good, you know? Yeah.
So let me.
So you deal with luxury homes, right?
Yeah.
And over the course of maybe a couple of years, you've seen the median home go from $275,000, you said?
Yes.
To now $325,000 in Atlanta?
Yes.
What are some of the factors that have led to that? And what have you noticed with the buyers? What demographic is doing the buying?
Well, predominantly my clients are all African American.
Okay.
So it's us. We are making some moves here. And what's the driving force is Atlanta is growing. Now, people can say what they want about Mayor Kasim Reed and when he tore down all them churches and built that up, built the dome, tore down them historical churches. But at the end of the day, when he made that move and they built the Mercedes-Benz Dome and they mm-hmm. kind of created State Farm Arena and they redid that,
yeah.
It created more opportunity for us. Now we have more opportunities. We have soccer games here. We have so much that's going
champions.
On. Champions.
Championship.
So, all these things. So we start with sports and then we just, now let's go out. Now you got people like Tyler Perry telling people to come down here and build their own tables in Atlanta. You have The Rock that just bought a $9 million house here. You got Cardi B that just bought her house here.
Yeah.
What is happening here is people are seeing that there is wealth here. And the good thing is that's how prices go up. We're creating our own black Mecca.
Yeah.
We're becoming the black Hollywood that they said we were going to be. When I first moved here, they was talking about the Beltline. When I first moved here, they were saying that we're going to be the next black Hollywood. I see it actually happening now. And that was from 06.
Speaking of Atlanta, speaking of the Beltline, and I saw a little baby on The Breakfast Club talking about, I guess he's from the west side of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying that his neighborhood, the prices is going up because of the Beltline. Can you talk about that?
You say he's a big client of yours?
No. It's a big project. So the Beltline is just basically a Beltline connecting the entire city of Atlanta. People only think about the Beltline being at the bottom, but it actually goes all the way around. And so what it does is really to help us, one, with traffic so you can get on and off the trolleys. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, you have like parks and all these things that are connected. So we're really trying to build our own communities within a community. So they do yoga in the park. You can now bike the Beltline down in South Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So they're creating these opportunities so we can be more like New York, you know? Like y'all got what you guys have. So we're trying to create that. And there's restaurants and there's like live work spaces. So you're really trying to create that environment because now everybody is, you know, no longer has the aspiration to get the big house in the suburbs. People now want to be close to the city. Mm-hmm. They're sacrificing space for that, and they want to enjoy their lives. That's the millennials. They want it right now. So they want to walk outside right now. They want to go on the trolley and get to where they need to go right now. So that's the big part of the Beltline.
So Atlanta, specifically, since we're in Atlanta, like what's the hot area that, because it's the west side, that's like when Mercedes-Benz Stadium is on the west side, right?
Yes.
That's like the hottest area in Atlanta right now for real estate?
It's a lot of hot areas. If I had to choose one, like it had the most appreciation value, this based on the numbers. I was running them the other day. They up 21% is the city of Decatur. Yeah, the city of Decatur is up 21% on appreciation values. The last time I checked on the west side, they're only up, they're up 12%, which is still good. East Atlanta is hot, but they're up 8% because East Atlanta is actually taking a little while longer to get through the process and gentrify than other areas.
Where we in East Atlanta right now, right?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
East Atlanta, same.
30316. So 30316, this area is growing. If I could tell anybody by zip code 30316, 30032, that's the city of Decatur, and then 30318, that's the hot area on the west side.
So these areas are hot. Is there a best time, a more ideal time to get into a deal?
I tell people, if you're looking to buy and you want a really good deal, shop in the winter month.
Winter. Why?
Because if a person is selling their houses around Christmas, they want to sell. They're desperate. You get a better deal. I onboarded so many clients around Christmas. That's why I didn't realize what year it was. But they got crazy deals. The builders is throwing money at you because they don't want to start the year in the red. Yeah. So if you're buying a property, buy it in the winter months. By the time you get to spring, two things happen.
That's what I always say, buy spring.
Want to sell and buy in spring because they want to hurry up and do this before they get out of school, do the transition. You have a lot of competition. Everybody's shopping in the spring. Prices are up in the spring. So from a buyer standpoint, you don't want to be out here when it's like 10, 15 people to one house, multiple offer situations.